This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 1st of August 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 31st of July 2014, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Richard Martin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Standing Firm on Pitt Vale Homes, Residents furious over cost of tree works, and fed up residents may take action. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Standing firm on Pitt Vale Homes. A developer is preparing to try to exploit planning policy to get approval for a major housing scheme on the edge of Winchester. Linden Homes proposes 500 houses at Pitt Vale to make up an alleged shortfall in Winchester's housing quota. The company says the City Council cannot show it has a five-year supply in housing to meet needs. Linden says it is preparing a planning application that is likely to go to a planning inquiry. But the council has hit back and said the proposed site off Romsey Road is outside the city's settlement boundary and so would be rejected. Steve Opacic, head of strategic planning, told the Chronicle, "It's outside the defined boundary of the Winchester settlement, so it is countryside, and therefore it wouldn't be permitted under current policies. I would expect it to be refused, as we are now in the process of local plan part two, and our current view is we're not going to need to allocate any more greenfield sites other than Barton Farm. We wouldn't need this or any other sites around Winchester. If what they're proposing is contrary to planning policies, they have to show other reasons. We are very confident we will be able to provide enough houses to achieve the government's targets. If an independent housing inspector agrees to these numbers, then we will address that. But Linden Homes are also talking about an appeal. This is on the basis that they think we cannot provide a five-year supply, but we say we can. Apart from Barton Farm, it would be the biggest scheme in Winchester since Badger Farm was built in the 1970s and 80s. At his public exhibition recently, a Linden Homes display board read, "Linden Homes is promoting the site through the LPP2 process. However, as the council is not able to demonstrate a five-year supply of housing, as required by the NPPF, that is, the National Planning Policy Framework, the decision has been made to submit an outline application to help meet the council's shortfall." Richard Eyre, Strategic Land and Planning Director at Linden Homes, said, "Following our exhibition, we received nearly 70 feedback forms, along with comments from the individuals and groups we met as part of our initial consultation, including the Pitt Residents Association, Winchester ACC, and the City of Winchester Trust. We are currently reviewing all comments that we have received, in addition to undertaking further technical and master planning work, and will provide feedback on the points raised in due course." In a letter to Linden, Nick Molden, chairman of Pitt Village Residents Association, called the development plans inherently flawed and inappropriate. He said, "It runs contrary to the stated and agreed planning policies of Winchester City Council. It is not required, as the council has sufficient land supply to meet its housing targets. Moreover, your proposal has been put forward outside the established and advanced local plan process. putting it forward in this way is both speculative and vexatious. Even if the council were to fall behind on its housing targets, there are many reasons why this proposal is highly unsuitable. Patrick Davis of the City of Winchester Trust said if Linton gets permission to develop Pitt Vale, then all the outskirts of Winchester would be open to house building. It would be catastrophic if this gets permission, he added.
Residents furious over cost of tree works. Elderly residents are fighting plans to force them to pay for the chopping of 10 trees at a Winchester retirement block. Residents at Mountbatten Court have been asked to foot the bill for the removal of the trees at the site off Andover Road. But they claim the £9,000 bill isn't their responsibility, and the request tops a long line of modifications the building has undergone which they have been forced to pay for. Ex-serviceman Dennis Dominey, 67, said the charges have increased significantly since he moved in 7 years ago as a result of endless improvements to the building. He said, "We had new kitchens put in when we first came here, which they put on the rent. Then there was a balcony, which they put on the rent. They're only too quick to spend our money. Because the trees are so huge, they're knocking through the foundations." So we had a meeting, and a manager said it has got to go on top of our rent like a service charge. She went back to her line manager to find out more, but the outside of the building is the landlord's responsibility, not ours, and we shouldn't have to pay for the removal of these trees. I'm responsible for inside the house, not the outside. John Hodgson, 69, has been living at the site for 5.5 years and said they had also been asked to pay for the cleaning of some glass panels at a cost of £300. The former cleaning company owner decided to give the panels a scrub himself rather than pay the charge. He was sent a letter soon after which said, "The cleaning of communal areas should be carried out only by approved contractors." Mr. Hodgson said, "I've come here to rent an apartment. I'm not putting in an investment. So many residents here are frightened of the repercussions about speaking out. I don't want to fight with the management, but I'm not paying for something I can do." The owners, Housing 21, proposes to add £1.40 a week to the resident service charges for a year to cover the tree work. Anne Killip, manager at Mountbatten Court, said, "We understand that tenants may be frustrated by potential changes to their service charges. However, we can confirm in relation to this matter, nothing as yet has been formally agreed, and we will be liaising with all of our residents to ensure they are fully informed as and when the situation develops. Winchester City Council has many trees in tenants' gardens and foots the bill for major tree work."
And more cross people in this item. Fed up residents may take action. Villagers still blighted by speeding motorbikes. Villagers blighted by antisocial motorcycles may be driven to take direct action, says a parish chief. People living along the A32 through the Meon Valley and the A272 east of Winchester are suffering worsening noise pollution from speeding bikers, many with illegal exhausts. Chris Waller, chairman of West Meon Parish Council, warned, "Unless something is done, you may get residents in West Meon blocking the A32 or going to Loomy's Cafe because they feel no one is listening to them. People feel their lives are being blighted. It's been going on for years, but it's getting worse because of the impunity there seems to be. People may start to do things and you can understand why." Mr. Waller said such action was unlikely, but there will come a point when people aren't being listened to and they will resort to things to draw attention, such as what happened at Southwick. Mr. Waller was referring to action taken by local people to stop the B2177 village bypass being used as a racetrack. Cars and bikes were attacked and the police were called. A petition in the Meon Valley placed in shops in West Meon, Corhampton and Droxford, is attracting signatures. Mr. Waller said the police should concentrate on monitoring speed not on the edge of the villages but out on the open stretches where bikers open up the throttle and the worst noise pollution occurs. He also wants to see the police take more action over track exhausts being illegally used on the roads. The police should go to Loomis, a popular cafe stop for bikers, and the bike shop in Alton and ask to look at bike exhausts. Then the message might start to get through. A meeting between Parish Council and Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes was held in May, and Mr. Waller said a follow-up meeting will be arranged soon. Mr. Hayes has pledged £135,000 over 2 years to encourage the expansion of the Community Speed Watch programme. The funding is allocated to assist with the cost of setting up around 70 new schemes. Mr. Hayes said, "I want to encourage local residents to take positive action by setting up a community speed watch in their area. They can do this by volunteering and taking action on the roads of concern in their neighbourhood."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Beckwith, Stella Agnes Beckwith, née Collins, at home on the 22nd of July, aged 92. Collins, Richard, known as Dick Collins, on the 28th of July, aged 77, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Dunning, Peter Donald Dunning, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 16th of July, aged 77. Garner, Stan Garner, at Challoner House Care Home, Chandler's Ford, aged 90, on the 24th of July. Gledhill, Gerald Lyle Gledhill, on the 26th of July, which was his 86th birthday. Kay, Richard Anthony Kay, aged 74, at home in Wincanton. Kelly, Anne Teresa Kelly, on the 24th of July. Leone, Domenico Leone, known as Leo, at home on the 23rd of July, aged 95. Light, Diana Light, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 18th of July, aged 71. Marsh, Peter Alfred Marsh, on the 22nd of July, aged 87. Nicholson, Andrew Nicholson, known as Joe, on the 18th of July, aged 69. Piggott, Mafanwi Piggott, on the 18th of July, aged 90. Trickle, Gladys Trickle, in hospital, on the 22nd of July, aged 88. Wootton, Florence, known as Flo Wootton, on the 20th of July. And next, we have Christian comment.
And this week it's written by Rosemary Baker, and she asks a question. Can there ever be a justifiable reason to go to war? This weekend and next Monday, many cathedrals and churches will be hosting special services and vigils to remember the beginning of the First World War. Other events, for instance, around war memorials, will also take place. And among the reflection and discussion that will take place may be the question, can war ever be justified? The example of Jesus is central to Christians' attitude to war. He was presented with an opportunity to lead an armed uprising, but he refused. Instead, he chose to endure torture without resisting. It was this choice, Christians believe, that set him on a path that led to the salvation of humanity. However, Christians find their opposition to violence is challenged when they are confronted with evils that are so great that the only way to bring them to a close seems to be military intervention. This has intensified in recent decades because of the rise of nuclear weapons and terrorism. Over the centuries, Christians have developed guidelines to help them think about whether they might have to set aside their usual rule of non-violence. They were first proposed in the 4th century by an African bishop called Augustine. His theory of a just war still shapes the way Christians think about these dreadful circumstances. Number one, there must be a just cause. War can only be tolerated to defend people in response to tyranny. It is forbidden to wage war in order to dominate others, increase territory, or gain wealth. Two, the decision must be made by the highest authority. In recent decades, Christians have looked to the United Nations for this. Three, every possible means of resolving the crisis by peaceful means must have been attempted first. Four, it must be judged that the war will not unleash an even greater evil than the one currently being suffered. Five, the war must be fought with specific constraints. Civilians must be protected from attack. There must be a reasonable prospect of success. It must cease when justice has been restored, and the level of violence must match the severity of the evil that is being addressed. During the first centuries of the Christian Church, all followers of Jesus were absolute pacifists. A significant number of Christians still hold to these principles, led notably by the Society of Friends, known as the Quakers. They point out that Jesus did not tell his followers to submit meekly when confronted by evil. Instead, he showed a way to be non-violent that was active, defiant, and sacrificial. This debate is still relevant, particularly with the situation in Ukraine and the Middle East.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have quite a crop of letters this week. The first set, not unsurprisingly, continue the Silver Hill saga. Then there are some letters about the general infrastructure problems in Winchester, some about sustainable development, and then just a few other ones to finish off. So we'll start with the first new letter.
And it comes from Kim Gottlieb, who is Winchester City Councillor for Itchen Valley. And this letter is entitled, "Decision Shows Little Regard for Concerns." Sir, you say in your editorial, Letters, July the 17th, that my campaign is 6 or 7 years too late. Well, with respect, that would have been at the start of the recession and before Thornfield PLC went into administration. It's also the case that I've been a councillor for only 3 years, but have spent most of that time telling folk inside the Guildhall exactly what I am saying now. The critical thing about timing is that projects of this scale need to be got off the ground at the earliest possible stages of any economic cycle, which is why we really do have a great opportunity to revisit the whole concept and to radically revise the whole design. Fundamentally, no amount of time spent or however wasted justifies expediting any scheme that will damage the historic character of the city and emasculate the high street, and whatever time it takes to get it right is what it will take. I am sure that on balance we agree far more than we disagree about the need to regenerate the area around Silver Hill and also the need to enhance rather than to diminish the city. The Chronicle's contribution to the process is a very important one. If nothing else, my campaign, which is still only a few weeks old, has shown how little was actually known about this history-changing development, which speaks volumes about the public consultation exercise carried out by the City Council, and why so many feel disenfranchised by a hasty decision that seems to have little regard for their concerns. Kim Gottlieb, Winchester City Councillor for Itchen Valley.
Mike Rowe of Kingsworthy asks, take it or leave it? Let's leave it. Sir, letters from the public published on July the 24th and earlier show the city's disquiet in the changing development of the Silver Hill project. We have to remember that the developer, Henderson, has only one objective, to maximise the return on its investment. Our council seeks to recover some credibility following a disastrous 10 years of effort. Henderson says it will walk away if it doesn't get its way. What is currently on offer is a shopping mall with houses attached. Already there are malls in Southampton, Eastleigh and Basingstoke, and it's suggested that Winchester should attempt to catch up and compete with these established centres. As has been pointed out, Winchester's record is dire. Henderson says, take it or leave it. I say, leave it, and get some real planners in to produce a decent project which doesn't involve more shops. Mike Rowe, King's Close, Kingsworthy.
David Selby says, bus station is essential. Sir, between 1987 and 2006, according to the South Wansdon Village Plan, the number in the 65-plus age group has increased by 63.5%. And nationally, we are assured that this trend is continuing. The availability and reliability of public transport, therefore, is of prime importance to this age group. A properly designed bus station is essential to enable people to travel in comfort and wait for their bus in comfort. The Cathedral City of Canterbury has an excellent bus station adjacent to its shopping plaza, and it is used mainly by stagecoach buses. The excellent online survey conducted by the Hampshire Chronicle has demonstrated overwhelmingly that Winchester still needs a bus station. It is quite likely that the architects of the Silver Hill development do not travel regularly by bus, if at all. And I dare say that this also applies to most of Winchester City Councillors and possibly the officers. I believe that the vote reflects local thinking on the matter, and I urge Winchester City Council to think again, as it will reflect generally on their view of the needs of public transport passengers and their encouragement of public transport for the future. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wansdon.
This letter from Sally Eames is also on the subject of the bus station and, as you will see, is very short and to the point. Sir, the bus station is important to Winchester. It has family history for quite a few people. They should look at updating it. You get rid of the bus station and you will kill Winchester. Sally Eames, Charles Close, Abbots Barton.
And on a similar theme, Karen Barrett says, people need decent places to live. As is clear from the Chronicle's letters pages, much of the recent controversy about Silver Hill relates to the design and architecture. My main concern, as I explained at the WCC Cabinet meeting, is the social impact on the community of the failure to provide affordable housing on this prime site, or the long-promised new bus station. While the arguments about the aesthetics of design will rumble on long after Silver Hill is completed, people on the housing waiting list do not have the luxury of time. They need decent places to live now and in convenient locations close to facilities. It's one thing for WCC to record its commitment to affordable housing, but quite another to ensure its provision on the Silver Hill site. What are they actually going to do? Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
Jill Hennigan says that infrastructure is the key to home building. Sir, with references to the letter New Homes Need the Infrastructure, mentioned in letters of July the 24th from Vivian and Steve Barnes, I would like to reinforce their concern about roads. Anyone living on the northwest side of Winchester, such as Littleton, Tegdown, Hairstock, Wick, who wishes to drive to the south, Romsey, Southampton, Stanmore, Badger Farm, Oliver's Battery, has to go along Chilboton Avenue and Romsey Road. Similarly, anyone living in those areas who want to go to the other way, towards Stockbridge, has to use the same roads. The building of more houses is going to increase enormously the already bad traffic jams on those two roads. When, oh when, will someone in authority be brave enough to force through a scheme for a road continuing Badger Farm Road from Pitt Roundabout to Stockbridge Road? I know this has been suggested before, and I can only presume it is powerful landlords or fear of environmentalists which is obstructing such an obvious solution to this particular problem. As to cost, when Badger Farm was built, I believe the developers had to pay for some or all of the building of Badger Farm Road before they were allowed to start. Jill Hennigan, Whackmark, Winchester.
Ron Baines says that the city must realise cars are essential. Sir, having lived in this wonderful city for 28 years, I have witnessed the ever-increasing population, the consequent traffic congestion, and the disregard or inability of our city council to address the problem. The best solution our city fathers have come up with is a park and ride facility which helps office workers and a few all-day tourists. Their other strategy is to encourage us to walk, cycle, or use the inadequate bus service. This works for some, but how are parents with young children, older people, of whom there are many, and those living in the Greater Winchester area expected to conduct their business in town? A complete rethink is desperately needed. We all understand and agree with the need to address environmental issues. However, it is also essential that the City Council embraces the reality of modern living as well. The two are definitely not mutually exclusive and, in fact, could be synergistic. There are three solutions. Firstly, we need to facilitate the efficient movement of traffic wishing to cross town by keeping it out of the city's one-way system. Secondly, we need to provide easy access and more parking for shoppers and those wishing to visit doctors, lawyers, etc., by designing a system which allows traffic to bypass the city centre, we would immediately remove the present log jams in town. And thirdly, we must stop the approval of new high-density housing developments and instead make planning approval conditional on explicit upgrades to the road system to manage the incremental traffic they create. These simple solutions would provide immediate win-wins for our city's economy, traffic congestion, pollution control, and most importantly, our extreme levels of frustration and time wastage. That letter is from Ron Baines, Baring Road, Winchester.
Keith Webb feels he has the qualities of a real friend of the earth. Sir, the article by Rebecca Pearson on a recent conference called on fracking gave far too much coverage to the way-out views of those who like to protest about anything that might, to their tortured minds, cause the environment to suffer. time after time, perfectly sensible activity which will benefit the vast majority of us is called into question by these protesters. They endlessly produce so-called evidence, which all too often has no scientific basis, but is the product of their fervent imaginations. Friends of the Earth, RSPB, the Green Party, a local Labour politician seeking to gain politically by opposing government strategy, all stand in the way of progress, making unscientifically based claims. We have to harness the natural resources of our own land to remain competitive in the world and deal with the demands of an ever-increasing population. Harnessing shale oil is but one, but an essential way forward. And until we find alternate ways than burning fossil fuel to provide for our energy needs, their nihilistic views of those who protest need to be addressed for the greater good of us all. Those who will undoubtedly attack my common sense motives should be aware that I am 83, still working, and grow over 40 sorts of vegetables and many varieties of fruit in my garden. I have provided conditions ideal for bumblebees, which fertilise the flowers and produce a large additional population of frogs and newts in my two ponds near every year. In addition, I harness all the water from my roof, so do not use mains water for flushing loos, showering, nor watering the garden. Perhaps these are the qualities of a real friend of the earth. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Jerry Bye talks about other costs of wind power. Sir, the cost-benefit analysis which Mr. Heath Caldwell gave in letters of July the 24th is most useful, but should it not have included as a cost a fraction of that of the gas-fired backup plant necessary when there is little or no wind? The efficiency of a wind turbine is going to be the amount of usable power per revolution of its blades. Multiplying this up to a meaningful level for a farm, we get kilowatts as a function of wind speed. 30 and 10 miles per hour are useful levels for indication of output and should be available in planning applications. Jerry Bye, Hurstbourne Powers, Whitchurch, Bigamore.
An exceptional year for the Hat Fair, writes Laurie Wilson. Sir, this year the Hat Fair really surpassed itself. Always a pleasure, it was an exceptional year. Best of all was the quirky, inspirational installation in Parchment Street. The dancing figures blowing in the wind, presided over by the kite flyers, were a joy. Lying on the ground, seeing the dancers and listening to the tape was the most relaxing experience. I'm sure the children enjoyed making their own figures. Well done to them all. That's from Laurie Wilson, Backstreet, St Cross.
And John Wilkinson, chairman of the Winchester District Christian Aid Committee, writes, "Thanks for Christian Aid support. Once again, through your paper, I would wish to express my sincere and warm thanks to all those citizens who delivered, collected and donated so generously to Christian Aid Week. This year, we surpassed both the previous year's totals. Through house-to-house, community and church collections, we raised £32,399 across Winchester and its immediate villages. This was a wonderful achievement. Many will benefit from such generosity. Christian Aid is a major worldwide charity which helps people of all faiths and none. It works through 507 local organisations in 47 countries and provides urgent, practical and effective assistance, giving local communities the tools and skills to find their own sustainable solutions. John Wilkinson, OBE, Chairman of the Winchester District Christian Aid Committee, Bridge Lane, Shawford.
John Harris rather cynically asks, is this a record? Sir, the B3047 was resurfaced last week in Itchenabbas and Motherworthy. This morning, Southern Water are digging a hole in the road at Motherworthy. Is this a record? John Harris of Motherworthy.
Right, well, as the hilarity has calmed down, we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have items from 200, 100, 50 and 25 years ago. So we'll have the 200-year item now.
Yes, which is from August the 1st, 1814. Excuse me, and I will try to... It's all one sentence. I'm going to try to read it without stopping. Notice is hereby given that a special general meeting of the proprietors of the lands and grounds directed to be divided, allotted and enclosed in and by an act passed in the 52nd year of the reign of his present majesty, entitled An Act for Enclosing Lands in the Parish of Itchin Abbas in the County of Southampton, will be held at the house of John Sims, called the Fleur-de-Lis Inn, situated in Kingsgate Street near the city of Winchester, on Saturday the 27th of August next, at 11 o'clock in the forenoon.
And from 100 years ago, August the 1st, 1914, the Women's Freedom League. Open-air meetings under the auspices of the League, which is becoming quite a constant visitor to Winchester, were held on Monday afternoon and evening. The afternoon meeting was held in the Broadway and was presided over by Miss Trott, organising secretary of the League for this part of the country. Miss Nina Boyle, who is perhaps one of the most forceful and resourceful suffragist speakers of the day, gave one of her admirable discourses. A large crowd assembled, but the proceedings were of a perfectly orderly description.
50 years ago, August the 1st, 1964, the 6th Itchin Valley Flower Show was held at Itchin Abbas Hall on Saturday, and it again proved to be a great success. The judges were Miss E. M. Chown for the vegetables and flowers, and Mrs. Dacre for the cookery and handicrafts, and both considered that all the exhibits were, as usual, of the highest standard. The children's handicraft section was also well supported. At the close of the show, the prizes were presented by Mrs. Osmond, who congratulated all the prize winners in the various sections with a word of commendation for Mr. A. Marsh, who won the Challenge Cup.
This is from 25 years ago, so that's 1989. East Hampshire housing chiefs have hit on the idea of offering cash incentives of up to £1,000 to lure elderly tenants into smaller properties. They have agreed to go ahead with it on the basis of a pilot scheme, in the hope that it will free more 3- and 4-bedroom homes for families at present living in houses too small for their needs. Eligible for the scheme would be any tenant aged 60 or over, at present living in a 3- or 4-bedroom home and wishing to move to a bungalow or flat, or from a bungalow into sheltered accommodation.
We now move on to the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, which will then be followed by a letter from Westminster by Steve Brine, and then a first-person view by Khalid Aziz. So we start off with the Hampshire Chronicle editorial.
And we're back to Pitt Vale. Gloves off in the Battle of Pitt Vale. Many battle-hardened and weary campaigners against new home development will be raising a glass to Winchester City Council this week. The council, so often the subject of criticism over new home building, has firmly set out its stall to fight what is being called a speculative and vexatious bid to change its planning policy. Linden Homes, which wants to build around 500 homes at Pitt Vale on the edge of the city, says such a scheme would make up a so-called shortfall in Winchester's housing quota. The firm says the City Council cannot show it has a 5-year supply in housing to meet needs. But the Council says the proposed site off Rumsey Road is outside the city's settlement boundary and so would be rejected. The land in question is designated as countryside and furthermore is not needed for housing, it says. The council says it is confident it will be able to provide enough houses to achieve the government's targets. Many will be watching with bated breath, with other land on the outskirts of Winchester vulnerable, should Pitt Vale eventually get permission.
Westminster Diary is written by Steve Bryan, who was the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Throughout my first term as Winchester MP, I have tried to organise interesting and hopefully useful public meetings from time to time. Asks SWT, held last year, was a chance for local train users to put their questions directly to the top team at Southwest Trains. Issues raised about the railway station in Winchester included disabled access to both platforms, as well as a chronic lack of parking spaces, and we've been able to answer both those points through the opening this month of the footbridge, with its lift access, plus the new decked car park, which has brought a 25% increase in parking capacity. One of the other main issues raised was around late night safety at the station, which is currently unstaffed after 9 p.m. each day. Both ticket offices are closed at that time, forcing travellers arriving back on the late London trains, for instance, to exit via a poorly lit side gate on Platform 2. I'm really pleased to say solid progress is now also being made in this area. I have been working with Southwest Trains, as well as council officers and the new cabinet member for transport at Winchester, Councillor Mike Southgate, to secure improvements. Southwest Trains continue to work really hard on this and are progressing with plans to increase the opening hours at Winchester, including a trial over the next fortnight to open the booking hall on Platform 2 on Sunday to Thursday nights to provide an alternative exit from the station. Linked to all of this is the new exit from the new car park out onto Andover Road. In the winter especially, it brings pedestrians and cyclists together with cars and is an accident waiting to happen. The good news is, while there are still some land ownership issues to overcome, there is now a plan to make improvements, and we just need to put the final bit of funding in place to get on with the work. I am picking this up with the new Rail Minister at Department for Transport, who have always been very supportive of Winchester and its busy station, serving as it does over 4.5 million passengers every year. We've just spent the past year working together at the DWP, so that's handy. Last week, the Hampshire Chronicle said our station is now fit for the future. And I think that's right. But I'm not blind to the capacity issues my constituents face every day. The other part of my work with the South West Trains Network Rail Alliance is in Westminster on the bigger picture, in liaison with ministers and the powerful local enterprise partnerships to make the major infrastructure changes necessary, on the route into Waterloo, for instance, to increase capacity down the line into the home counties. Indeed, when Parliament returns in September, one of my first tasks will be hosting a major event for Southwest Trains, the Alliance with MPs from across the region, to carry on pressing our case within government. As someone sensible used to say, we're getting there. You can find out more about my work and get in touch via 01962 791110. That is 01962 791110, or at stevebryan.com.
This is First Person Now by Khalid Aziz this week, and it's entitled Summer Is Here and It Doesn't Get Much Better. How much better can it get? The sun shines and we have little to do but enjoy living in God's own county, Hampshire. Two key events mark the high watermark of the summer season, the St Mary Bourne Flower Show and Test cricket at what we must now call the Aegeus Bowl to keep the sponsor happy, but what we all persist in calling the Rose Bowl. The Flower Show is the Bourne Valley's key happening, a proud assertion which I am sure will have the villagers of Long Parish and the two Hurstbournes reaching for their pens in protest, for they too run highly creditable events. But it's the Flower Show that captures the quintessential Englishness of a summer in the south. Tiny cash prizes, you do well if you win 50 pence, handed out in brown envelopes, dutifully filled by trusted members of the committee for all sorts of rural enterprise. Best veg, obviously, and cakes and jams. We have a national champion marmalade maker in our midst who regularly picks up top prizes. This year saw two youngsters from Enham Trust carrying off certificates and firsts. There's photography and children's drawing and rewards for those who provide beauty for passers-by. The prize for the best front caused some merriment until the uninitiated were informed that it referred to a horticulturally excellent house frontage. Playing to our strengths, we ran the bar. For me, coming full circle, as one of my earliest filling jobs was as a barman in my teens. I rather enjoyed it, what with the banter and all that. What's more, it offers a chance to provide almost instant satisfaction as customers streamed in for respite from one of the hottest afternoons so far this summer. But what of the cricket? Well, it's getting better and better. It helps to have perfect weather. Previous internationals have been marred by rain. Hampshire Cricket Club is beginning to understand that in addition to great cricket, to attract crowds of occasional followers, you need to entertain well. Mind you, it's not cheap, but I guess in the days of professional sport, you have to expect that, as those who follow Premiership football down the road know only too well. Even the traffic is getting better. Entry and exit to the car parks has been swift, although I understand there were issues with the park and ride on day one. What capped it all was that the battered England team finally seemed to be getting their act together. You could feel the crowd willing Alastair Cook on, and he didn't disappoint. His knock of 95 was rewarded with a standing ovation. The young Gary Balance did well too, with a century, and there was great relief when Ian Bell racked up a similar score. Hampshire wants to secure an Ashes match, and you feel they're on their way. Of course, St Mary Bourne Flower Show arrived some time ago and will take some knocking off its perch.
Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 1st of August, the sun rose at 5:30 in the morning and will be setting at 10 to 9 in the evening. And Wednesday of next week, that's the 6th, sunrise is at 5:40 in the morning and sunset is at 22:09 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. There is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now continue with items of general news interest.
And I have a piece here about the British Heart Foundation. Public thanked for £1.7 million boost to the British Heart Foundation. Their shops in Hampshire have raised an impressive £1,728,000 in the past year to help fund life-saving research into heart disease. Thanks to volunteers and fundraisers from Portsmouth in the south of the county to Basingstoke in the north, the BHF has been able to fund 97 defibrillators, 8 heart support groups and 26 healthcare professionals in the region. BHF also currently funds 18 Head Start schemes in Hampshire, which teach emergency life support and CPR training in local schools and businesses. All BHF's shops have an in-store community board with information on local events, nearby heart support groups, and BHF leaflets and information. Preston Davis, BHF area manager, said, "We're truly overwhelmed with the ongoing generosity of the local community in Hampshire. People often don't realise that the sofa or dress they donate to or buy from the local BHF shop actually raises vital funds and helps pay for anything from an echo machine in their local hospital to a community heart support group. We couldn't fund this life-saving equipment or research in Hampshire without the support of the local community."
Mayor's pilgrimage to war graves. The Mayor of Winchester has made a poignant visit to the Western Front to pay tribute to her grandfather-in-law. Councillor Eileen Berry visited the Windy Corner Cemetery on the Western Front in France, where Sergeant Fred Berry is buried. Sergeant Berry, who served with the King's Royal Rifles Corps, was killed in February 1916 and lies with his regimental comrades in a War Graves Commission cemetery. Councillor Berry said she was made aware of the story by her father-in-law, also Fred Berry, who showed her his father's name on the war memorial at St Mary's Church in Kingsworthy. On the death of her own husband, John, she inherited lots of military memorabilia, including letters from the trenches. Councillor Berry said the letters were written with the heartfelt anguish from a young man to his wife, Rosanna, and to a son that he never saw. He never met him. Reading these letters and receiving the medals and the death plaque, I again became very touched, said Councillor Berry. It was in my mind that one day I would like to honour this man. From letters sent to his widow, his men loved him. He was a great leader. She went on, "The first cemetery that we went to, where this gentleman's grave was, had 3,500 men buried there. It would seem that when Sergeant Berry fell, his comrades fell with him. They were in a line, and their ages ranged from 18 to 27. The other thing that was most touching as well was that hundreds only had a, quote, soldier known only unto God, unquote. This was very poignant and made me feel very humble. Family members with me made a pilgrimage through the whole of that cemetery and thanked them all for their sacrifice. We passed five cemeteries and were told that one had quite a number of Indian soldiers that had fallen. So we went to that cemetery and looked for them and blessed them. There they were, quite a number of them, all drivers and all Indians. They all fell in 1914 at the beginning of the war. How sad is that? And so we said thank you to them as well. They were very young. And this article is accompanied by a colour photograph of the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, looking at graves at the Windy Corner Cemetery in France. And she is also a picture of her carrying the wreath in honour of her grandfather-in-law.
Praised for retaining forces frontline staff. Hampshire Police is doing better than most at protecting frontline staff despite multi-million pound cuts, a new report has found. The county force was praised by the HM Inspectorate of Constabulary for reducing crime and having one of the highest proportions of frontline staff in the wake of continuing cuts. But Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner and the Hampshire Police Federation have warned there is now nowhere left to cut, leaving the front line at risk. PCC's Simon Hayes said it was reassuring HMIC judged Hampshire to be in a good position to deliver savings, but highlighted the, quote, extremely difficult and challenging times ahead, unquote. John Apter, chairman of Hampshire Police Federation, which represents rank and file officers, warned that while the front line has been protected so far, the next 12 months will see them targeted with 500 officers and staff set for the axe. Overall, the HMIC report found the force was making good progress in making its financial challenge of making, I beg your pardon, in meeting its financial challenge of making £52.9 million worth of savings over the spending review period. The report found Hampshire to be on track to achieve its required savings and that it has clear and well-developed plans in place to achieve most of the £10.6 million savings needed in 2014-15. The Constabulary has also continued to reduce crime and improve victim satisfaction, despite making considerable savings and reduction in police officer and staff numbers. Deputy Chief Constable Craig Denham said, "This is good news for taxpayers in Hampshire. It serves as independent evidence that we are providing value for money while protecting neighbourhood policing. We can do this because we are already innovative in our partnerships and have among the highest proportion of officers and staff in frontline and visible roles." Given this context, it's appropriate to add some caution about the future. Whilst we are doing everything that we can to prepare ourselves, policing in Hampshire receives less government funding per head of population than in many other parts of the country, and so further cuts would hurt us more than other forces. Mr. Hayes said he would now insist neighbourhood policing remains at the core of policing, but admits with so many savings already made, there are difficult decisions to come. He said, "I question the extent to which more savings can be made through a future spending review before the quality of service is significantly affected and public safety is put at risk." Mr. Apter said, "While we've done well in managing the budget cuts up to now, focusing on backroom staff and specialist teams, there has been a knock-on effect and it's the front line that will be hit hard. Rather than telling forces how well or bad they have been coping with the cuts, they should be raising concerns with the government about the effects."
And whilst we're in the area of crime, I have a piece entitled "Judge Rejects Man's Appeal Over Jail Term." A Winchester man who was jailed for 9 years for a vicious assault on a love rival at a music concert has failed in Court of Appeal to clear his name. Santosh Gurung, 31, of Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, left Jenico Reyes scarred for life after the attack in London in February last year. Gurung denied the serious assault, but was convicted by a jury of wounding with intent and jailed at Woolwich Crown Court last July. Last week, in the Court of Appeal, he challenged the guilty verdict and the length of his sentence, but two senior judges said there was nothing to suggest his conviction was unsafe or that his sentence was too long. This was an unprovoked assault on an innocent victim who received serious facial wounds requiring 30 stitches and which caused permanent scarring, said Judge Guy Boney. Rejecting his complaints, Judge Boney said, "It is not arguable that a sentence of 9 years was wrong in principle or manifestly excessive."
A game's top 10 finish for Louise. Winchester's Louise Damon was the first English runner to finish yesterday's female marathon in the Commonwealth Games. In a race won by Kenya's Flumina Cheyech Daniel, the 31-year-old from Winchester clocked a time of 2 hours, 32 minutes, 59 seconds to finish in ninth position on her game's debut. "It's the first championships marathon that I have run, so it was a slightly more tactical race than I'm probably used to," said Damon. "I've tweaked my nutrition a bit and tweaked my pacing, and that seems to have paid off. There was incredible crowd support there. I thought the London Marathon was amazing, but this was something else. It's been a great stepping stone for me towards Rio, but that's the next big target." Another runner from the South, Bournemouth's Steve Way, aged 40, produced a record-breaking run in the men's marathon in Glasgow. The recent winner of the New Forest 10-mile race can now lay claim to being the fastest Englishman at the Games. And the new British record holder for runners aged 40 and over after coming home 10th. Way's time of 2 hours 15 minutes and 16 seconds beat Ron Hill's previous record, held since 1979 by 30 seconds, and smashed his previous personal best set when he finished 15th at this year's London Marathon.
Raising their glasses to the Winchester Wine Festival. A new festival celebrating wine from across the region will take place in Winchester in November. Local connoisseurs Susie and Peter Richards hosted an evening of Hattingley fizz and canapés last Wednesday to promote the forthcoming Winchester Wine Festival. The three-day event will be at the Guildhall from November the 21st to the 23rd, in time for the opening of the Christmas market, and aims to encourage people to learn more about wine and buy a bottle or two for Christmas. Mr. and Mrs. Richards, who are regulars on BBC One's Saturday Kitchen with James Martin, hope the event will change people's perceptions about wine being snooty. The launch, which was held at the Paul Woodhouse Suite at the Cathedral, drew an array of people, and not just the experts. Mr. Richards said, "It went really well and everyone had fun. That was the atmosphere we were looking for. Everyone really enjoyed the wine and it was such a nice evening." November's event will have 4 sessions, each lasting around 4 hours, and tickets can be bought for £25. There will be a 25% discount for any early buyers. "It's not the cheapest event, granted, but it's fantastic value for what you get," said Mr. Richards. "There'll be a free glass with the entry packet, and there'll be lots of food, cheeses and the like, and various masterclasses, as well as the wine. What we really want to do is push the point that it's fun, but it's a great chance to buy wine and get good value products in time for Christmas." The wines will be colour-coded according to taste rather than by region or country to ensure visitors can enjoy a fuller range. "This follows the taste system and is aimed to make wine more accessible," Mr. Richards added. "I think it's the kind of thing that's happening right across the wine world. It used to be quite stuffy before, a bit snooty, rather than trying to make wine more available. But we were really delighted to the reactions we had, and we're definitely going to be making more noise about it."
City to mark the outbreak of the First World War. Range of events to commemorate the Great War. Winchester is preparing to mark the 100th anniversary of the outbreak of World War I on Monday, August the 4th. A range of events will commemorate the momentous moment that Great Britain plunged into the Great War. People are being invited to take part in Lights Out, switching off for an hour from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Monday, the moment the UK declared war on Germany. It references the prophetic remark by Sir Edward Grey, Foreign Secretary, on the eve of war: "The lamps are going out all over Europe. We shall not see them lit again in our lifetime." Sir Edward had a fishing hut at Itchin Abbas, where he spent the night of August the 3rd, 1914, before travelling to London to announce the UK's entry into war. The cathedral will hold a lantern-lit vigil on August the 4th from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. The Dean, the Very Reverend James Attwell, said, "The event is designed to be a reflective occasion, which will enable each person to make their own personal journey as we remember in the presence of God, young lives full of a sense of duty and service, summoned from the familiar to the tragedy of war." Winchester Planetarium at Maun Hill has Civil Aviation Authority clearance to project a high-intensity light beam onto the Science Centre. Jury Street Art Café is inviting people to attend a candle-lit sculptural exhibition of work by Robert Truscott and showing the film All Quiet on the Western Front. At 9:30 p.m, Winchester Area Tourist Guide Association is leading a guided walk to the Chesil Tunnel, culminating in a 2-minute silence lit by a single candle. The City Council has also commissioned a light installation Box 459, designed by local architectural firm AR Design Studio. The box will be positioned outside the cathedral. Winchester Quakers are staging an outdoor exhibition at the Friends Meeting House on Colebrook Street, telling the story of Britain's conscientious objectors. It will include material about the clandestine Winchester Whisperer news sheet run by conscientious objectors held in Winchester Prison, as well as unique personal documents from a local Quaker whose father was not prepared to kill. The exhibition is due to open tomorrow, Friday, that's today, at 7 p.m, will run until October the 12th. On Sunday, August the 3rd, villagers of Compton and Shawford will stage a Great War Day on the Memorial Playing Fields, Compton. At 8 p.m. there will be a rededication service of the two war memorials on Shawford Down and a service of the Wooden Cross to remember the hundreds of thousands of servicemen who passed by on the way to the South Coast during the war. More than 10,000 soldiers of the Hampshire Regiment who lost their lives in active service will each be remembered with a cross in a field of remembrance in Winchester. Searle's House Museum in the city is dedicated to the Hampshire Regiment and has just completed a refurbishment after receiving a Heritage Lottery Fund grant of £93,000. The Field of Poppies will remain in the Regimental Memorial Garden at Searle's House from today, Friday, August the 1st, until mid-September. The Great Hall is hosting displays of exhibitions being staged across the country.
Viaduct christened at a special ceremony. The Hockley Viaduct has been christened at a special ceremony in which 40 guests came to mark the occasion. Hampshire artist Nicola Henshaw, who was commissioned by Winchester City Council to create a series of panels for the refurbished site last year, led the walk from the viaduct to Abbey House, the official residence of the Mayor of Winchester, Eileen Berry. Whilst there, friends of Hockley Viaduct, children from Winchester schools, and members of the Winchester Area Tourist Guides Association enjoyed some strawberry tea to toast the day. Miss Henshaw explained how the project had taken shape and the themes that had inspired her to create the panels and the sculpture. Councillor Berry said, "As an artist myself, I really appreciate the quality and beauty of these sculptures. I'm happy to see how many people Nicola has involved in her work, and to know that many more will be able to share the viaduct story over the years to come." A special thanks was given to the individuals who helped form the project, as well as school children from All Saints in Highcliffe and All Saints in Compton.
County stops sending elderly to care home. Council chiefs have vowed not to place any more elderly dementia sufferers in a Winchester home until it makes drastic improvements to the standards of care it provides. Hampshire County Council says it is now monitoring the residential home, where they have placed 13 people, after it failed a second surprise inspection because of a catalogue of failings. As revealed by the Hampshire Chronicle last week, inspectors from the Care Quality Commission, that's CQC, turned up unannounced at St Cross Grange in St Cross following further complaints about residents' care. A scathing report revealed how there were concerns around the deaths of five residents within weeks of each other at the 64-bed home, while a total of 14 people ended up hospitalised. Hampshire Police confirmed they had attended the home following the deaths between February and April, but said that none were being treated as suspicious. The inspectors also noted fears of malnutrition, dehydration and choking among residents, and said they had received claims that people were left unwashed for a week. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, Executive Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, said standards needed to improve as a matter of urgency. She said, "We are continuing support the residents in the home, both those funded directly by us and privately funded, to ensure their well-being and let them have continuity of care. We are not placing any new residents in the home while we are working with the provider and the CQC. The watchdog issued legal warning notices to owners Green Sleeves Homes Trust, which has now installed a new manager at the home in St Cross Road. Should standards not improve, the Commission has the powers to shut down the home. The Trust said a plan to bring the home within the law has been submitted to CQC and it was committed to the welfare and well-being of its residents.
And a fishy tale here. Tightening the net on river poachers. Police have caught four people poaching on Hampshire rivers. A man was reported for offences and had his fishing kit seized after he was found illegally fishing in the Soberton area in the Mayon Valley. Three men have been reported by police after being found illegally fishing on the River Itchen in Highbridge. Inquiries are ongoing in both cases.
Carnations and celebrations at Mayor's residence. Though few have been inside the official residence of the Mayor of Winchester, fewer still have seen it like this. The inner rooms of Abbey House were filled with every kind of rose, lily and carnation to celebrate the life of King Alfred the Great at a special flower festival fundraiser last Friday. Otterbourne Flower and Garden Club, of which the Mayor, Eileen Berry, is a member, created colourful interpretations of the icon's life, from his days as a scholar to the revered King of Wessex, with a mixture of floral designs. The group was commissioned by the Mayor for her first fundraising event of the year to follow the King's key moments with a range of specifically designed exhibits, such as Alfred the Visionary, Military Warrior, and Founder of the Navy, and of course the Tale of the Burned Cakes. Co-organiser Carol Bailey said, "The trouble with King Alfred is not a lot of people know too much about him, yet a lot of people recall the story of the burned cakes, so we've dedicated one display to that part of his life. Dark sunflowers with petals removed were used to tell the story of how Alfred had burned some cakes he was asked to watch over while in hiding from the Vikings, as a result of being so engrossed with his troubles." Miss Bailey said the theme involved some research, but said the team of 28 members recreated his legacy beautifully. She added, "I don't think we have ever done an exhibition before, and to do it in a place such as Abbey House was wonderful." Councillor Berry said, "As a member, I know all too well Otterbourne could do a good job, and the theme is right. Abbey House has never been used in this way, and it shows what this lovely place can be used for, things that are visual and are blessed with this building. Otterbourne Flower Club has shown it in its best light."
Bath Tot's tragedy is mum's drugs shame. A woman whose two children drowned in the bath 15 years ago has been shamed in court after admitting being part of a heroin supply ring. Lynn Brownsey stored the Class A drug at her Hampshire home and received a personal supply of the drug as payment. The court heard that the 36-year-old never recovered from the deaths of her two daughters in Alsford in June 1999. Brownsey, then 21, slipped and knocked herself unconscious while supervising her two children, 3-year-old Natasha Russell and 18-month-old Abigail Brownsey, at her flat in Windsor Road. When she came round, she found the girls unconscious in the bathwater. She ran screaming into the street, but passers-by were unable to revive the girls. Natasha was declared dead at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Abigail was taken to the intensive care unit at Southampton General Hospital, but died the following day with her parents at her bedside. Brownsey was interviewed by detectives, but was never charged with an offence. A verdict of accidental death was recorded on both youngsters. The death shocked the market town and attracted national newspaper headlines. One neighbour said at the time, "They were lovely children, and they would look out of the window and wave at you." 15 years on, Brownsea was one of four defendants last Friday at Winchester Crown Court for sentence relating to heroin supply in Basingstoke, where she now lives. Judge Jane Miller QC called Brownsea a sad person. She added, "I have read of the tragic event in your life, and it was that caused you to go into drug use. But you and your partner allowed your house for drug supply. Of course, it was the only way you could get the drugs, but that's no excuse." She sentenced Brownsea to 15 months in jail, suspended for 2 years, for allowing her house to be used in the supply of drugs and for supply of heroin, two offences she had admitted at a previous hearing.
It's been a few minutes since we've had this item mentioned, so I thought I'd bring it up again. Housing on Silver Hill agenda. Winchester policymakers will again discuss the £150 million Silver Hill scheme next Wednesday, August the 6th. The City Council Cabinet will meet to look again at the issue of affordable housing in the redevelopment of part of the city centre. The developer Henderson says providing the previously agreed 100 affordable homes would make the scheme unviable. It wants to see a mechanism whereby it makes payments towards such housing depending on the future profitability of the development. But there's strong public support for including social housing.
Second youngster in trouble at Lock. Parish councillors have taken action at a lock where a 9-year-old nearly drowned and a girl reported she too thought she was going to die. Compton and Shawford parish councillors have been working with neighbouring Twyford parish council at Compton Lock after a schoolboy became entangled in the water. Joe Chilcott, a pupil at St Peter's Primary School, was saved after a passerby saw he couldn't hold himself out of the water on July the 20th because a rope had caught around his ankle. Now another student has stepped forward saying she too feared for her safety after the rope got caught under her neck. Ella Wharton, aged 16, from Nursling, starts at Barton Peveril College in September, and she said, "The rope is attached to the little bridge, which people put a stick on, and you can swing from it in the water. My friend went before me, and he went through okay. The stick was floating in the current attached to the bridge, and I went through on my back, and was slightly under when the stick got caught under my neck, so the rope was dragging me. One of my friends, Ben, jumped in and I managed to get free, but I couldn't breathe. I was only stuck for about 10 seconds, but I thought I was going to die then and there. Although I got it off before my friend helped me, if no one was there and the current was stronger, I wouldn't have been able to pull it off. And if a little kid jumped in, they wouldn't be able to do that either. You have to be a strong swimmer or you wouldn't be able to get out." Chairman of Compton and Shawford Parish Council, Adrian Walmsley, said, "We were obviously very concerned to hear about the incident, which was reported in the Chronicle. We're in close contact with the City Council and the County Council on this matter, and also with Twyford Parish Council, because the lock itself straddles the border between our two parishes. As soon as we became aware of Sunday's incident, we started discussions with Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, and Twyford Parish Council. We've spoken to Russell Robson of the Environment Agency, who encouraged us to quote his safety recommendations on our website. Both of these recent incidents highlight the importance for bathers of all ages of not going swimming alone."
Grass seed thieves sought. Police are hunting raiders who got away with a large quantity of grass seed after breaking into a barn near Stockbridge. Officers say that more than 60 bags of seed were stolen from a grain store on the Leckford estate during the early hours of last Friday. Each bag contained enough seed to sow around an acre of land. Anyone with information should contact PC Dan Coppin at Andover Police on 101. I'll repeat that. PC Dan Coppin at Andover Police on 101.
Cycling after history of King Alfred the Great. More than 120 people took part in the annual Wantage to Winchester cycle ride on July the 20th. The riders enjoyed fine weather, but welcomed the refreshment stops along the route from the birthplace of King Alfred the Great to his final resting place at Hyde Abbey Garden. They were welcomed home by the Mayor Eileen Berry before retiring to the nearby King Alfred pub for a meal. The event is organised every year by Hyde 900 Community Group. The route, all along beautiful minor roads and via the Bourne Valley, was devised by Hyde resident Andy Key. The 53-mile ride celebrates King Alfred the Great, who first brought together the territory that became modern England. His burial place now in the vanished Hyde Abbey was featured in the January 2014 BBC Two documentary The Search for Alfred the Great, in which Hyde 900 took part. And the piece is accompanied by a photograph of a number of people in cycling gear and cycling helmets holding up their bicycles with the mayor, and everybody looks very happy with the whole thing.
Birds of prey fly in for open day. Residents at a Winchester care home celebrated a national day with a visit from birds of prey. Colton Care Home in Abbots Barton opened its doors to 8 birds of prey to celebrate National Care Home Open Day. The birds, including owls, falcons and hawks, were members of the Falcon High display team based at Brambridge Park Garden Centre near Colden Common. Janet Orchard, activities organiser at the Worthy Road home, said, "The residents and their visitors all adore the birds. It's a real hands-on experience for everyone, as well as being educational. It was the perfect activity for National Care Home Open Day, as it was spectacular, but also very interactive, so everyone could join in and enjoy the day together." Staff and residents at Tegfield House, owned by Hartford Care, also celebrated the day with an afternoon of cream tea. Sean Gavin, Hartford Care's CEO, said, "National Care Home Open Day was a fantastic day in all of our homes this year. We were delighted to open our doors to our local communities and are so pleased with their response."
38,000 festival fans to descend on area. Final preparations are underway for the biggest festival in the Winchester area. Coordinators for the Boomtown Fair are in the throes of finalising noise levels, contact details and directions for the event, ready for its 38,000 revellers. This year sees Shaggy, NoFX, The Cat Empire and Jimmy Cliff headlining the stages, as well as Lady Saw, Regasonic, Playing for Change, Bodica and Chaz and Dave. Organisers of the event, which runs from Thursday, August the 7th to Sunday, August the 10th at Matterley Bowl, have released new contact details aimed to help residents over the 4 days. The hotline, 0208 185 3963, I'll repeat that in a second, goes live from today and will give locals the chance to raise any issues directly with festival staff. That hotline number again, 0208 185 3963. Details of an additional entry and exit route specifically for camper vans and coaches have also been confirmed. They will be directed via Twyford, Morestead Road and Longwood Road when travelling inbound on Thursday between 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and outbound on Monday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. The Twyford traffic lights will be managed from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. on these days. The normal entry route along the A31 from the M3 Junction 9, the Spitfire link, to Alsford will affect traffic on Thursday from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. and on Monday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. The A272 from the A31 to Rodfield Lane would also be affected on Thursday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Monday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The A31 central reservation gaps will be closed to traffic on Thursday from 5 a.m. to Monday at 5 p.m. Temporary 40-mile-per-hour speed restrictions will also be enforced along the A31 and the A272. Organisers have also introduced additional sound monitoring devices. On Wednesday, between 7 p.m. to 9 p.m, the fair will test the sound systems as agreed by Winchester City Council. There will be 9 off-site monitoring positions, as well as 2 permanent locations to the north and south of the site. Satellite phones have bolstered communications between staff to ensure any complaints are responded to as soon as possible, and the noise team will continuously monitor site readings. For the first year, the fair has a dedicated community response team working from Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. until Monday afternoon. They will be on hand to discuss parking, pedestrians, litter, or any other issues affected by the fair's presence. There is also a community liaison officer on site who will be free to do home visits. The gates open for vehicle and pedestrian access from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursday and from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
This item is headed Bowled Over by Fun Day. 8 teams battled for victory at a family fun day to raise money for a junior cricket club. The Eastern Sixes tournament last Friday at the David Roth Memorial Cricket Ground drew crowds from across the county. It was organised by the Eastern and Martyr Worthy Cricket Club to raise funds for its junior development academy, which coaches and mentors players aged 13 to 21. Club chairman Adam Murch said, "It's only the second time we've done it. The weather gods were kind to us. We had around 350 people turn up and we had 8 teams of 6 players. They played 15 overs. We also had an under-13s demonstration." The action kicked off on Thursday with a tug of war, and the fun day also included 2 bouncy castles, ice creams and a hog roast. The Chestnut Horse Pub took the crown and 16-year-old Zach Mitchell won Player of the Day. And the piece is surrounded by pictures of lots of smiling children, lots of boys holding cricket bats, but I notice no girls.
Ooh.
The city's 20-mile-per-hour zone to start next month. The new 20-mile-per-hour speed limit for Winchester City Centre will come into force on August the 18th. The reduction in speed limit, one of the biggest traffic changes in years, will be implemented following the necessary preparations and approvals from both the county and city councils. Work will start soon on painting roundel markings on the road, with a small amount of signage to follow shortly afterwards. It is hoped to complete this work in September, but it is subject to weather conditions. County Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "Good roads are a priority for Hampshire County Council. The County Council plays an important role in ensuring that transport and travel in Hampshire is safe, efficient and reliable for all who live and work here. By working with our partners, Winchester City Council, and listening to what the public have told us, a reduction in traffic speeds in the historic centre of Winchester will make the city safer and a more pleasant place to be. There will be a small amount of disruption when the new speed limit signs and markings are installed, but we ask that people bear with us as this should be very short-lived. 20 miles per hour zones have been introduced recently in Whinnell, Stanmore and Highcliffe.
Vote in favour of 400 new homes. Councillors have voted to support plans for nearly 400 homes on the edge of Alsford and work with a community group to develop an alternative option. At Tuesday's Town Council meeting, five voted in support of controversial plans which would see homes built to the east of the town on land off Sun Lane. Barbara Jeffs voted against the endorsement and Jonathan Reed abstained. As part of Winchester City Council's Local Plan Part 1, Alsford is required to build 500 homes with 386 yet to be allocated. During public participation, Jeremy Collins, a property surveyor and property director at John Lewis of Bishop Sutton, offered to work for free with the council to develop alternative plans. He said, "I represent a group of professional people. Having heard everything that's been said by other members of the community, we believe passionately that Alsford requires a sustainable plan to be produced which will enable development to be built that respects the grain of the town. We are willing to provide our services to work with the town council and local community." Councillors agreed to work with them. Roy Gentry said, "I propose that town councillors work with the local community group supported by relevant professionals to establish an alternative draft plan that, if it's considered viable, is submitted to Winchester City Council no later than January 2015. The move was unanimously approved, and Chair Lisa Griffiths said it is necessary to satisfy more residents. She said, "I hope that they feel better about this now that we are doing the right thing. There's a lot of support for the Sun Lane site, but there is also a great deal against it. We have to take this opportunity with this group that has come forward to create an alternative that will satisfy more residents. I know it's going around the houses again, but we need to do that to satisfy more people." Councillors feared that not supporting the proposal would result in the City Council enforcing a plan on the town. On Monday, Mrs. Griffiths said, "We don't see that there is a better solution to Sun Lane. The feedback that we have is everybody is very reluctant and nobody wants to do it. But it has to go somewhere and we don't have an alternative that we feel is better." Mr. Collins said the community group would like to set up consultations in September and then work with the council to agree a work programme.
Hospital staff celebrate improved car park. Winchester Hospital staff have been celebrating the unveiling of a new and improved car park at the Romsey Road site. Nurses, doctors and officials gathered in front of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital at the official opening. The new open-air car park, which has replaced several outbuildings, has meant the 1868 Butterfield Wing is now more visible from the main road. The works are said to have cost £280,000. The Hospital Trust's Chief Executive, Mary Edwards, said, "We're very grateful for all the kind donations we receive from patients and their families. People's generosity towards the hospital means we can do something extra to improve the services and facilities we offer to patients. In this case, we've been able to remodel the front entrance of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for something closer to its former Victorian glory. This has created a more welcoming and accessible environment for patients and visitors when they arrive at the hospital and includes improved disabled parking and drop-off facilities closer to our wards."
Improvements for Week Post Office. A Winchester post office is set for refurbishment and will open for 65 extra hours a week. Based in the Southern Cooperative in Stony Lane Week, the branch and shop will shut next Thursday, August the 7th, at 5:30 p.m. for just over a fortnight. It will have two screened positions and a combi counter. a post office terminal which sits alongside the shop's retail till, and offers most services. Car tax renewal has been added to its services. The new opening hours will be Monday to Saturday, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Adrian Skinner, the area manager, said, "We know how important post office services are, and we are confident this vibrant, modern post office at the heart of the community will be popular. It will reopen at 9 a.m. on Friday, August the 22nd.
That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to the various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith,
goodbye,
John Richards,
goodbye,
and Richard Martin,
goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please remember to return the memory stick as soon as you are able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.